Okay, folks, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Allahumma salli wa sallim wa barak ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Allahumma la sahla illa ma ja'altahu sahla wa anta tajlu al-hazna idha sha'ta sahla. Allahumma a'inna ala dhikrika wa shukrika wa husna ibadatik ya rabbil kareem. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Right then, folks. First of all, is this too loud? It feels horrible from where I am. Very echoey, very loud. All I can hear is my own voice. It's horrible. So, can we get rid of it? Or Shaz, what's... Oh, sugar. Okay, yeah. What if I bring it down a bit? Okay, does that sound better when it's lower?
Yeah.
Reduces the echo, yeah? Okay. And I don't think it's going to impact upon the recording, I think. That sounds to me better anyway. All right, folks, so welcome. Jazakumullah khair for everyone who is attending, close and far, and especially the folks online. Obviously, we have a new setup. And it is important during the class on the portal, as well as afterwards when I get home and I'm able to review the comments in more detail as well, that you share your feedback on this new setup. Obviously, for the folks here, it won't affect much. It just makes it a lot easier upon the team without having to do a lot of the setup that we used to have with the separate camera system. But obviously the difference is for you folks at home. The look is obviously different and maybe the feel is different. And obviously having a camera directly in front of me would make me feel more connected and aware of the online students. Now the camera's a bit further back and it's important because all of these lafange in front of me, not a single one of them actually, or maybe 1% of them actually studies the text and sits the exam and knows what we're talking about, knows what we're covering. And so I couldn't care less about the people in front of me. They're here for the salah, they're not here for the class. And for the people who are online, they're the proper students, the real students, they're the ones who study the text. And on the whole, maybe a couple of sisters will be, actually their sisters generally will be the exception. The other feedback is of course from you guys. Certainly for this month, meaning September, it will remain like this. I say September because obviously with the times coming down, we've got that little tricky situation where when to actually be able to do the lesson. And for the next month at least, it's too late to do it after Isha. After Isha obviously allows us a lot of freedom, the masjid empties, the sisters can then be closer, etc., etc., etc. But not when we have a very busy Maghrib and Isha, very busy, and so we cannot have too much movement and screens put up and all that palaver. So from your point of view, it will be important as well to give feedback on the experience. Although I like Shaz's idea of having the back open, that I think is useful. All right, so what we're going to do, let's do a few announcements first. The first announcement is that this year will be, this is year 13, mashallah. Obviously, there are a lot of people who are taking this class for the first time, especially online, and maybe some folks here as well. And they get a bit kind of, you know, put off by the idea of, you know, year 13 and, you know, class texts and exams and things like that. This class should be started wherever you attend it, whatever lesson that you arrive at, and then the rest can be easily caught up with in summary sessions. You should not be daunted by the size of it, and you should not allow the waswas of shaitan to put you off it. Very much so that he will make it more difficult or sound or feel more difficult than it actually is. It's not that deep, folks. All right? It really isn't. It's a lesson that everyone that you attend, you'll benefit from. And the others, you'll be able to catch up very, very quickly. You don't need to worry about the years or anything like that. So that's for the first timers. Timing in general, obviously the app is there. You should all be part of the Telegram group. And you can find the link for that on the portal for you folks as well. If you want to join the Telegram chat group, again, you'll find the links on the portal as well. You just need to go to logicalprogression.org and sign in. Then you'll be able to then find that. Now, reason that's important is because all the updates in terms of times and things like that are put there. And you can download the app from there directly. This year will be a lot of movement, different countries, and I'll be abroad quite a bit in other places. And for that reason, it is important that you're aware then whether it's being held live here or not. It will not always be like that. For September, we are having all of September, inshallah, here locally, and it will always be between Maghrib and Isha. So be aware of that. It'll get earlier and earlier and earlier. Then October, it will start to change significantly. So you need to have your wits on around you with the October timings. The final thing I will say before I forget, which it is an important local event, is this weekend. Obviously, some of us are going to the retreat. And for you folks, I'd ask you guys to be patient, the ones who are here or are attending the lesson. After Salatul Isha, once the rush goes down, we're going to congregate outside and we're going to just do some redistribution of people and goods and things like that. So that's important. Please be hanging around. And as for those who have not been able to get to the retreat, the spaces were obviously limited, and especially the sisters, then please make sure that you attend the Al-Maghrib program. Sheikh Sulaiman Hani is in town. That will be this Saturday. Bilal will be around to answer any questions. Maliha here as well? No? So just Bilal will be around to give further guidance. Salford, is it? Yeah, it's at Salford University on Saturday the 7th. Yeah? All right. So what I want to do... for this lesson is something a little bit different, which is that I want to read out the entire chapter that we are going to be covering. The only reason that we're able to do that is because for some reason I translated the whole chapter. I'm very proud of myself, very happy. Nobody showed any love whatsoever. And I do think that it'd be nice for us just to get a feel. I do feel that it avoids extra questions. Right, when you know that, okay, this is going to come up, right? So I'm going to put it all out there of what we're going to be covering over the next X months, which is the chapter of Jumu'ah. Obviously, we already started it, okay? Speaking about that, actually, we did start briefly the chapter of Jumu'ah because we finished the big chapter, which was the chapter of the people who are excused, meaning those that have issues and problems and need concessions in their prayer. So we've already completed that, and the exam focused on that. And well done to everybody that took the exam, and everybody else that hasn't, then you have next weekend, not this weekend, the weekend after, to try that again, as to go for the second kind of sitting of that. And then, so 2 weeks today, we will do the review of the exam. Review meaning, you know, just a brief overlook of the results and things like that. So that's another point there. Now... where am I going to read this? Now, are we showing some screenshots? Are you going to be able to do that? Yeah? So what we're going to try and do is also to see with this new tech and stuff that you can maybe see the text on the screen. If, online, you won't do it, by the way. Will you get online as well? It needs a few minutes, did you say? Then forget it then. Then, because that's just wasting time. So I'm going to read it, and maybe you carry on with it, with your whatever, and then you can just put it on the screen. So I'll read the Arabic first, and then by the time that Shaz gets it ready, the English will be ready anyway. So this is Bab Salatul Jum'ah, the chapter of the Friday prayer. And our author, Imam Al-Hajjawi, alayhi rahmatullah, and a quick reminder of what it is that we're doing here. Maybe for the, especially for the first timers, and maybe some people who have been out of it for a long time, what is LP? What is logical progression? This class is a, honestly, it's an opportunity and an excuse to come to the masjid. If I'm going to be very honest, all of the classes that we started, even the original logical progression back in the day, 25 years ago, whatever, and then every other iteration of it, and then Al-Adab Al-Mufrad in Makki, it was about giving an opportunity for people to have a feel-good night in the masjid. We normally would do it on a Friday or a Thursday towards the end of the week, but that's just not possible logistically, so we had to move LP to Wednesday because of weekend obligations and the like. And the idea was that if we can at least get people to attend one of the prayers of the masjid and also learn their deen and have an open forum for people to ask questions and things like that. But that kind of thing also is nice. Some people do that already. Let's also throw something in, and let's also try to give it some veneer of structure. I say veneer of structure because the theory is that we have a matan, a text on fiqh, that is covering all of the legal aspects of Islam in some kind of logical kind of fashion. And that's the reason why it's called logical progression, in that it starts in the way of all classical texts, from the beginning of a chapter, or from the beginning of a subject all the way to the end in its various chapters. And Islamic law has always been put out in chapters and in a logical fashion. So there's no point speaking about X, Y, and Z acts of worship if you haven't got the preconditions of worship done. And the preconditions normally start with purity. And so you need to know then how to purify yourself. You need to know what's pure. So it starts off like that. So you have to go slowly through these processes. Then it focuses on the big, big acts. So Salah always comes first. And so we're in year 13, and the previous 12 years have done purification and all of the issues to do with breaking states of purity, and then the prayer, individual, the pillars, the obligations, the sunnah acts, then the various special types of prayers, and we're now deep in the middle of that. But that's just a loose structure, because the concept is, the theory is that we discuss those matters in, again, a flexible way, even though the text is a Hanbali text for the fourth of the four schools of Islamic law. But we are covering different opinions, we're discussing, we're opening up the floor for people to have their queries on it. And it is, although it can come across formal, it's meant to be informal. And then we try to have a part of it where people can ask questions about other things as well. So that's basically what the class is. People shouldn't take it too seriously. I'm a Hanafi, I'm a Maliki, I'm this, I'm that, I don't know what, blah, 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 I don't know what madhab I am. Just come, just take what you, if you know your position and what you're practicing already, then this is just increasing your knowledge. If you don't have a position about a particular matter, then you're taking it from me, of course. Because obviously if you don't know a position already, you don't know what your parents told you, you don't know what your madhab is, then obviously you're going to take what's here. But if you're coming as a student of knowledge where, no, I'm very happy and comfortable with my position, but I'd like to know what the details are on that position, I want to know what other scholars say, then that's the attitude of the student of knowledge, always looking to embrace knowledge wherever it can be. Yalla Shaz, I think you're there. Alright, so this is the chapter of Salatul Jum'ah. This is the entire Arabic of Imam Al-Hajjawi in the Hanbali Madhab. This Imam, he was famous for his ability to be able to put a text forward that summarizes absolutely the entire legal system in a very brief and easy kind of way. And so this is the Arabic, and my translation will follow. فباب صلاة الجمعة تلزم كل ذكر حر مكلف مسلم مستوطن ببناء اسمه واحد ولو تفرق ليس بينه وبين المسجد أكثر من فرسخ ولا تجب على مسافر سفر قصر ولا عبد امرأة ومن حضرها منهم أجزأته ولم تنعقد به ولم يصح أن يؤم فيها ومن سقطت عنه لعذر وجبت عليه وانعقدت به ومن صلى الظهر ممن عليه حضور الجمعة قبل صلاة الإمام لم تصح وتصح ممن لا تجب عليه والأفضل حتى يصلي الإمام ولا يجوز لمن تلزمه السفر في يومها بعد الزوال يشترط لصحتها شروط ليس منها إذن الإمام أحدها الوقت وأوله أول وقت الصلاة العيد وآخره آخر وقت صلاة الظهر فإن خرج وقتها قبل تحريمة صلوا ظهرا وإلا فجمعة. That's what we're going to be covering today. Up until this statement, we've covered it last year. الثاني حضور 40 من أهل وجوبها الثالث أن يكون بقرية مستوطنين وتصح فيما قارب البنيان من الصحراء فإن نقصوا قبل إتمامها استأنفوا ظهرا ومن أدرك مع الإمام منها ركعة أتمها جمعة وإن أدرك أقل من ذلك أتمها ظهرا إذا كان نوى ظهرا ويشترط تقدم خطبتين ومن شرط صحتهما حمد الله والصلاة على رسوله محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وقراءة آية والوصية بتقوى الله عز وجل وحضور العدل المشترط ولا يشترط لهما الطهارة ولا أن يتولاهما من يتولى الصلاة ومن سننها أن يخطب على منبر أو موضع عالي ويسلم على المأمومين إذا أقبل عليهم ثم يجلس إلى فراغ الأذان ويجلس بين الخطبتين ويخطب قائما ويعتمد على صيف أو قوس أو عصا ويقصد تلقاء وجهه ويقصر الخطبة ويدعو للمسلمين. والجمعة ركعتان، يسن أن يقرأ جهرا في الأولى بالجمعة وفي الثانية بالمنافقين، يعني السور، يعني سورة الجمعة، وفي الثانية سورة المنافقين. وتحرم إقامتها في أكثر من موضع من البلد إلا لحاجة. فإن فعلوا فالصحيحة ما باشرها الإمام أو أذن فيها، فإن استوت في إذن، يعني وممكن أو as well، فإن استويا as well but I think this is better، فإن استوت في إذن أو عدمه فالثانية باطلة، وإن وقعتا معا أو جهلت الأولى بطلتا. وأقل السنة
That's horrible.
Why are you doubting the moves? I told you I got no love whatsoever for this unbelievable effort, by the way. MashaAllah. وأقل السنة بعد الجمعة ركعتان. Bro, are you kidding me? I have to listen to myself there as well. No, come on. Yeah, tell him, pull it out or turn it off or something. Oh, right. Oh, you mean I only need to listen to myself during the reading part?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's all right, that's fine. That's only 20, 30 seconds, that's okay. Are you guys actually following the Arabic? Yes? Yes, okay. No, I haven't finished yet. No, we're just having a conversation in the middle. Huh? No, down.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh. No, you've got different notes. My notes are perfect, bro. Yeah, you've uploaded the wrong one.
Well, you haven't sent the right one then.
I have, yeah. 100%. Don't let Mesa do your bestie now on the thingy right now, bro. Don't make her do your bestie, bro. Because you know where I just got these notes from? From the email that I sent you. وأقل السنة بعد الجمعة ركعتان وأكثرها ست ويسن أن يغتسل وتقدم ويتنظف ويتطيب ويلبس أحسن ثيابه ويبكر إليها ماشيا ويدنو من الإمام ويقرأ سورة الكهف في يومها ويكثر الدعاء ويكثر الصلاة على النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم ولا يتخطى رقاب الناس إلا أن يكون إماما أو إلى فرجة وحرم أن يقيم غيره فيجلس مكانه إلا من قدم صاحبا له في موضع يحفظه له وحرم رفع مصلى وحرم رفع مصلى مفروش ما لم تحضر الصلاة ومن قام من موضعه لعارض لحقه ثم عاد إليه قريبا فهو أحق به ومن دخل والإمام يخطب لم يجلس حتى يصلي ركعتين يوجز فيهما ولا يجوز الكلام والإمام يخطب إلا له أو لمن يكلمه ويجوز قبل الخطبة وبعدها. All right. So that's the text. I am concerned that if Shahzad has the wrong one here, then that means that he's also got the wrong one on the portal. So Mesa, if you can put the PDF on the portal, the proper one, the one that's been missed, or I don't know how that can be done, by the way, Shaz, I don't know. But okay, but so I maybe an older one or something, but I'm going to now read the English. All right. So the Friday prayer is obligatory on every free, that means non-slave, legally responsible, that means of age and sane, resident male, that means not a traveler and that means not a temporary resident, living in a built-up area that is known by a single name, even if it is divided in parts. As long as the masjid outside of this area is not further than a farsakh, which is a measure of movement, classical distance. We covered all this last year. It is not obligatory upon a traveler who has the right of shortening his prayers, neither upon a slave nor a woman. Whoever attends the prayer will have it accepted from them, but they cannot be used to convene its legal validity, neither can they lead the prayer. We discussed this last time as well. This is similar to the issue of the Hanafi school. They said that if a woman was to attend this prayer, she prays it, but she has to go home and pray dhuhr because the prayer didn't count for her, as an example of what that text means. Yeah. Whoever has an excuse to not pray it, is obligated to pray it if they attend, and they can be used to establish the prayer's legal validity. Whoever was obligated to pray the Friday prayer, but instead offered the Dhuhr prayer before the Imam had prayed, will invalidate their prayer. However, if one who is not obligated to pray the Friday prayer, like a woman, does the same, it will be valid, i.e. a woman at home, for example, even though it is better to delay their prayer until after the Imam has prayed. It is not permissible for the one whom the Friday prayer is obligatory upon to travel after the start time of Dhuhr on Friday. There are a number of conditions for the validity of the Friday prayer. The permission of the Imam is not one of them. The permission of the Imam is not one of them. This Imam is referring to the leader of the Muslims. It's a political point that's being made there. We covered that last year. Firstly, the time. It starts from the beginning time of the Eid prayer and finishes when the time ends for the Dhuhr prayer. This was the last lesson of last year. Okay, in March, this is where we finished the academic year with this point. And obviously, this is a humbly specific position. This is not the position of the majority of scholars. We covered that. How you all understand Jum'ah prayer is the position of the majority, which is Dhuhr prayer, basically. But you can see that the Hanbalis actually allow it to start earlier, as you just explained. From today now, we're going to be covering the new section as follows. If one misses the time before even saying the Takbiratul Ihram, he should offer the Dhuhr prayer. Otherwise, he is to pray the Friday prayer. Secondly, this is the conditions, as we said, for the validity of Jum'ah. So first, you've got to do it in the right time. Secondly, there must be 40 attendees present, all of whom legally convene the Friday prayer, meaning no women, no slaves, that kind of thing. Thirdly, these attendees must all be resident nationals or citizens of that town. However, the prayer is also valid outside any built-up areas, meaning the city, if it is close by in the rural surroundings. If the number of attendees falls below the legal number, the legal minimum, before the prayer is completed, they must restart it again as the Dhuhr prayer. That would be under 40 for the Hanbali score. Whoever catches one raka'ah with the Imam should complete it as the Friday prayer. However, if he catches less than that, he must complete it as the Dhuhr prayer, as long as he intended that as Dhuhr, which I think is now something that many people have started to realize, and they do that. But if you didn't know that, that's going to be a big, big issue for you to learn. It is another prerequisite, another shart, to precede the prayer with two sermons. For them to be valid, they must contain the praise of Allah, have salutations sent upon His Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam, have a verse recited, have an admonition to the taqwa of Allah, the Almighty, the Exalted, have in attendance the minimum number of legal attendees. Those are the five conditions. It is not a prerequisite for the sermons to be delivered in a state of purity, and for the same person who delivered the sermon to lead the prayer as well. It is from the recommended sunan in the two sermons to deliver it from a pulpit or a high place, greet the believers with salam when he faces them, and then to sit down until the adhan has been completed, sit down in between each of them or both of them, meaning the two sermons, stand when delivering each one, each sermon, lean on a sword or a bow or a staff, face ahead when delivering, keeping it short, or keep it short. And finally, the eighth one, or H, supplicate for the Muslims. The Friday prayer consists of two units, and one should recite out loud therein with Surah Al-Jum'ah in the first unit and Surah Al-Munafiqun in the second. It is impermissible to establish the Friday prayer in more than one place in the locality unless there is a need. If that did happen though, it will be valid as long as the Imam himself attended or he permitted for it to go ahead. Again, Imam here is talking about the leader of the Muslims. Okay? The Hanbalis will always be speaking about this, and it is a political point that's being made. Alright? As long as the Imam himself attended or he permitted for it to go ahead. If two Friday prayers were equally both permitted to go ahead or both prohibited, the second of them would be invalid. If they both occurred at exactly the same moment, or one can't work out which one was first, they are both invalid. The minimum sunnah units after the Friday prayers are two, with six the maximum. It is the sunnah to take a bath, as we explained previously, and to cleanse and perfume oneself, to wear one's best clothes, to walk to the masjid early, to be as close to the imam as possible, to recite Surah Al-Kahf during the day itself, and to increase in supplications, as well as sending salutations upon the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. One should not step over the people unless one is the imam or there is a gap. It is impermissible to take the place of another person unless that person was someone who was saving a space for them. It is also impermissible to remove someone's prayer mat until the prayer actually starts. If someone leaves their place for some issue and then returns briefly, he has the most right to that same place. Whoever enters the masjid during the imam's sermon must pray two brief units before he sits down. It is not permissible to speak whilst the imam is giving the sermon unless it is the imam or a person the imam is speaking to. However, anyone can speak before and after the sermon. And that is the entire chapter of the Jumu'ah prayer. All of its fiqh, all of its sunnah, all of its adab, everything. And we're going to obviously be covering that in a lot of detail over the next few months. Okay, folks? Obviously, there's, you know, detail there, and there'll be you know, some questions that will be in your mind, but that's okay. We have plenty of time to go into it. Right, so let's start right at the beginning then, which is what? Here we are. فَإِنْ خَرَجَ وَقْتُهَا قَبْلَ تَحْرِيمَ صَلُّ ظُهْرَ وَإِلَّا فَجُمْعَ. Okay, let's remind ourselves of the issue of the time. There is a discussion amongst the fuqaha of what is actually the start time for Jum'ah. Now obviously, practically speaking, we've never thought it could be anything other than Dhuhr time. Dhuhr Adhan starts and then you pray. But actually there are, as we covered last year, there are some narrations from the Sahaba, and there is some discussion amongst the Sahaba that it could have started just before or a little bit before the Zawal time, which is the start for Dhuhr. And that's technically in the Eid prayer time or the Duha praying time. And obviously we discussed that, and it is absolutely the safer position to assume that it is the Dhuhr time. So I want you to just to, you know, keep in that kind of, keep with that mindset. Okay, as for the end time, there's also a little bit of discussion. Is it straight out Asr, or is it, can it go a little bit further? And the majority of scholars are comfortable with Salatul Asr being the cutoff time. So nice and simple, Jum'ah time is like Dhuhr time, and that's it. Okay? The next question. The next point that we do well to remind ourselves from last year is that Dhuhr is not, that Jum'ah is not a like for like for Dhuhr. That's important. It's a prayer that's prayed in its time on a Friday, but that's technically different than saying it's a replacement. Because if we say that a prayer is a replacement for another, then by that we mean that it therefore takes all of the associated rulings as well. For example, the most common and famous question is, can I combine my Jum'ah prayer with the Asr prayer if I'm a traveler? So I'm a traveler, I've attended a masjid, I'm on my way, and, you know, can I combine? And you know that our position is that you cannot combine the Jum'ah prayer with the Asr prayer, unlike those who said you can, and they said you can because Dhuhr and Asr can be combined because I'm a traveler and I need to. So Jummah is replacing Dhuhr. And we say no, Jummah does not replace Dhuhr. Jummah is prayed in the place of Dhuhr, which sounds the same thing, but it's two legal different realities. And because Jummah is this independent individual prayer, therefore one cannot. So an irony is that actually we would be pushing a traveler away from attending the Jummah prayer because it's actually more difficult for him to attend. And that's not a big shock or whatever. If a traveler is having to make a detour, then we're saying this is against the Sunnah. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, what did we establish last year? One of the big kind of lessons that we learned last year is that never did the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam ever establish the Jummah prayer as a traveler. Never. And what does that mean? People get confused by what this means. It means that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he's on the road with 100 people, 1,000 people, 200 people, 40 people, whatever, he's never prayed the Jummah prayer when the Jummah time has come in. But that does not mean that if you are a traveler, you don't pray Jummah. No. What we mean is that if you are all a group of travelers, you don't make a diversion to a locality that is praying, or that you've got to go and take a detour off your road, or if you're traveling in a desert, for example, and you know that there's a village over there, they're going to be praying the Jummah prayer, we have to go. No, you don't. Your travelers carry on going and pray your Dhuhr and the like. Today, obviously, things are not that different, but you're not in the wilderness for so long. I say that very UK-centric. I mean, in America, for example, it'd be a very different story, actually. You'd be on the road for you know, I don't know, days even. These route, whatever they call them. What's the famous one? Six? 66? Is that the one? Route 66, then. Once you're on that Route 66 class, you could be down for days and get eaten, you know, multiple points along the way, or something even worse, which is to come across gay cannibals or something like that. Yeah, and you know, it's a madness what happens over there in America, but it's true that there, obviously if you're traveling in the bigger countries, it could be a thing. The point being is that even if you know there's a Muslim community, you don't need to come off. But now if you're a traveler and you're amongst the Muslims in a Muslim area, then what we confirmed last year is that the Friday prayer becomes obligated because the people are establishing it. So if you are amongst people, you have to pray. And that is a reminder for you that if you are a traveler, then you want to get right out of that town very quickly before Jummah starts. Because if you want some ease and you want a cheeky bit of combining and all the rest of it, then you need to be out of there. Otherwise, if you're around when the Jummah time starts in a town or a city or an area where Jummah prayer is being prayed, it becomes obligatory upon you. Do you understand the difference, folks? Or do you understand the nuance, what I'm saying? So if you're a traveler on the road, you don't need to pray Jummah. If you're a traveler in an area where Muslims are praying it, you have to pray it. And if you pray it, you can't enjoy a concession like combining. All right. So that's the next point that we realize. Now, in Dhuhr time, the Jummah, again, another reason why Jummah is not a replacement for Dhuhr, which is why you can't combine it with Asr prayer, another reason is different, is because you can't make it up. So if you miss the Jummah prayer, if you arrive to the masjid late and the Jummah is done, it's done. So if you come to a masjid like this and you arrive at 3 o'clock, for example, because there's two Jummah prayers and you already seen that that's a problem according to the text, multiple Jummah prayers, multiple different locations, these are all problems, all right, that we'll have to kind of try to understand and find a way around. But if you arrived at 3 o'clock and the Jummah prayer has prayed and there's nobody around, you don't pray Jummah by yourself. You pray the Dhuhr prayer because the Jummah prayer is not made up, it's not repeated, you don't just have one on tap, it's just gone now. But likewise, the same situation applies if you arrive late to a Jummah prayer, and that's what's being discussed here. Now the irony is Sheikh Uthaymeen's starting comments. He goes, you know, this issue that a person is not going to make the Jummah prayer, he says that the time for Jummah prayer will be so late that there's only time left for Allahu Akbar to be said before the time expires, meaning the start time of Asr. Yeah? He goes that a person would delay their Jummah prayer so late that they wouldn't have even enough time to make the Takbiratul Ihram is something which I can't even imagine. It is, he says that This is تكاد تكون فرض يعني فرضية لا واقعية. This is something which is hypothetical. This is not something which actually happens. Or if it happens, then it's so rare. This is something that happens every day for like 5 months of the year in the UK, right? And it's a right stress. You're looking at the clock and you can see that start time, Asr yani, is coming. And there's your khatib is droning on and on and on. He's not yani read the script. He's not read the room. The whole situation is upside down. Because when you're in your areas in the Northern Hemisphere, so Europe especially, Northern Canada and the UK of course, then winter time, autumn even, and then certainly winter into February, you are going to have Asr starting late, early, 1:40, 1:38, 1:37, yeah? And then 1:50 and the like. And so that actually is a very common situation. Sheikh Uthaymeen is obviously not thinking in extreme zones, and we wouldn't think that we're in an extreme situation, but for him, he's actually describing what he said. He goes that the scholars, may Allah reward them, don't think that they're just wasting our time speaking about hypothetical situations. So he's still taking the hypothetical kind of line. He goes that these things sometimes might happen once in a thousand years. Or he goes, maybe they don't happen, but it's very important for the scholars to discuss it so you can set principles, because it's the principles that must be established, even using a rare example, because then another situation will occur in history, which isn't so rare, but you'll be able to solve it because you are using the principles that have been set. And the only way that you can set principles is to keep testing it by throwing hypothetical situations at it. And that's very important for scholars to do. So even though hypothetical scenarios can be very irritating, they do need to be considered. And the scholars are the scholars, and the level that of scholarship that they have is that they're able to think outside the box, think of new scenarios, and try to set some kind of principles for them. Anyway, then the Sheikh says, but this is so, you know, unlikely, because he's thinking that obviously everything closes down, all of the, you know, everyone comes to the masjid, and that this khutbah went on so long that by the time anybody realized that nobody's got a watch, this he even says, he goes, basically nobody's got a watch, and it's gone on, and then suddenly someone realizes, you know, that they've got literally seconds left before Asr kicks in, right? He goes, that's so unlikely. He goes, but and also what's unlikely is how they exactly meant to know when Asr kicks in. He goes that, you know, when it comes to hearing the length of time for Takbiratul Ihram, that means that you know that the sun and its shadow on the stick itself, on something outside, has reached exactly the length of the item itself, plus its original length, you know, as we covered in prayer times. And that you are watching it, and to watch it itself, it takes a couple of minutes to be able to understand that. So this is something which I want you to know, that even Sheikh Uthaymeen, he's there saying that this is not something that can be accurately, you know, calculated. So this is very rare. Oh, he didn't, obviously he mentions that, you know, people who are using clocks and times in modern times do know the exact time, because we're working it out now scientifically as opposed to, you know, watching a physical observation. However, his point is still real, that there's going to be a bit of leeway there anyway. So I don't want you to get too lost in the fact that if we're in a masjid and the time is 1:38, but then it's actually 1:40, there's always going to be a couple of minutes yani give in these prayer times. So I'll just say that. Sheikh Uthaymeen now wants to now get to the crux of what actually is the minimum time. So what is the what are the Hanbalis saying? They're saying that the amount of time that you have as a minimum is only enough to say Allahu Akbar. So for the imam, this is now referring to, and I don't want anybody to get confused, we're not talking about an individual here, we're talking about the legislation of the Jumu'ah prayer itself. So we're talking about the imam and to establish a legal prayer. So he has to have enough time to say Allahu Akbar, and for him, for the Hanbalis, the prayer has now started. Now, that means that if the Asr time was 1:38 and it is 1:37 and 50 seconds and there's 10 seconds left before the start time of Asr, as long as the Imam turns around and checks that everyone's there and then he turns and Allahu Akbar and now it hits Asr time, the prayer is valid, the prayer continues as Jum'ah prayer. Because according to the Hanabila, according to the Hanbali school, the minimum has been achieved to catch the prayer. Now this concept of idrakat, okay, the catching of things is something that we covered in quite a bit of detail, right? About 2-3 years ago, whenever it was. How and when are different prayers caught? What does it mean to catch a prayer? And the Hanbali, and I'm going to come to show you the differences between the Hanbali school and the rest of the scholars. All right. So the Sheikh said, فَإِنْ خَرَجَ وَقْتُهَا, meaning the Imam al-Hijawi, the text. So if the time itself is expired and you weren't able to catch that takbir, then you have to pray dhuhr, because there's no way back for that Jummah prayer. So let's say now that the Imam starts at 1:38 and 30 seconds. There's no point. Look at the time. Asr has started. You have to now pray dhuhr. You have to now pray dhuhr, and that dhuhr, you say, it's not even a dhuhr because it's in Asr time. Yes, it is dhuhr, but it is dhuhr qada'an, not ada'an. Ada' means to offer it in its proper time. Qada' means to offer it after its proper time. These two words, qada' and ada', which is the same in Urdu as well. You know, we say namaz adakar or whatever, something like that. Something like that. Yes? Do it. Perform it properly. And qada' means to do it post its time, after its time. Okay? Now, a person might say that for the imam, just to get this waswas out of your head, that, okay then, so for the Jummah to be valid, we just need to have enough time before Asr to say Allahu Akbar. Is that correct? For the Jummah to be established? That's what we're speaking about, yeah? What we're speaking about right now, again, listen carefully, is that to get the Jummah prayer legally in, we have to be able to have enough time to say Takbiratul Ihram. So is that all enough then for Jummah? Like, can the Imam rock up basically at 1:37 and 30 seconds and say, guys, it's all cool, I got this, Allahu Akbar, and everybody's Jummah is complete? He hasn't done the sermons. It's not possible to do that intentionally. The khutbah is an obligation of the Jummah prayer. And so I just want you to know that what we're talking about is obviously assuming that the khutbah has already been done. But if the khutbah has not been given, then the game's over yani from the beginning. Do you understand what I'm saying? So this whole issue and question is assuming that the khutbahs are either ongoing or that they've been done, and now we've got this issue about the Jummah prayer. Is that clear, everybody? So that nobody gets confused on that. Anyway, this is the position of the author, and it's also the position of the madhab. Because sometimes the author, Imam al-Hajjawi, will differ from the position of the Hanbali school, the official position of the school. So this is the correct position in the Hanbali school as well, that they consider a prayer only to be caught if you catch Takbiratul Ihram. What did the majority of scholars say? What, yani, do you need to do to catch a prayer? And what does catching a prayer mean? What do you think, folks? Sorry? A sajda, okay. So then there's the opinion of a sajda for the prayer, okay. Anyone else? Ruku'a. And that, of course, is the position of the vast majority, yes? And these three positions, which is just takbiratul ihram, all right? And that idea comes from the idea that as long as you enter into the salah, then you've caught the salah. And the takbiratul ihram is what you use to enter the salah, so that's enough to catch the salah. Now, by the way, the rest of the scholars don't entirely disagree with this, but they say, yeah, this works for the reward of the prayer. This, you know, works for the reward of the prayer. Like, for example, if you were able to say Allahu Akbar before the Imam said Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, yes, you would still maintain in the congregation, isn't it? You get my point? So even the rest of the scholars accept that there is some value to this. But where we differ, yani, in this, what we differ on here is not about whether the congregation or the prayer reward, but what has actually been achieved. What have we caught of the prayer itself? And the majority, and the other minority position is that you have to do one full rak'ah, which means that you have to go to the sajda and do the two sajdas, get up. That's another opinion. But the position of the majority, and it's the correct position as well, and the position of the three imams, is that you have to do a rak'ah, catch the imam in ruku', be able to go down in some kind of fashion before the imam says, Sami Allahu liman hamida, or before the imam stands up. Because of the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, man adraka ar-ruku' faqad adraka ar-raka'ah. Whoever catches the ruku' has caught the raka'ah. And because of this nas, because of this text, that is why this is the dominant evidence in the subject, because there isn't actually one to say whoever, you know, man adraka takbirat al-ihram qad adraka ar-raka'ah. There is no text like that, that whoever catches the first takbir has caught that raka'ah. And we are not talking about the reward here. We're talking about, have you been able to pray an actual unit of the Jum'ah prayer? Have you been able to actually get into the Jum'ah prayer? Not its reward, but into it. And that's why when a person prays one rak'ah, or gets, yani, like for example, in a second rak'ah, if you walk into the masjid late, yes? And in this, and the imam is in the second ruku' of the second rak'ah of Jum'ah, and you catch him, what you've caught is one rak'ah. Agreed? You've caught one rak'ah, haven't you? You caught that second rak'ah. So when the imam gives salams, you will stand up and you will do one rak'ah of Jum'ah prayer. But if you caught the imam standing or in sajda of the second rak'ah, you've caught nothing. You've caught a congregational prayer with the imam, but you've not caught any Jum'ah. You missed Jum'ah because you didn't catch a single ruku'ah, single legal thing. According to the Hanbalis, it's something a little bit different, but put that to the side for now. When this person, when the salam is given, he stands up and he prays four rak'ah. What was the function of the imam, you might ask? The same function as a person who walks in wanting to pray dhuhr behind the imam praying asr. The same function as a person who prays in Ramadan and prays four rak'ah fard of his own because he's arrived late in Ramadan behind the imam's two rak'ah taraweeh. Right? You've just taken benefit of the imam leading, got the reward of the congregation, but you didn't get what he's praying. Your intention is something different. And your intention needs to be something different. You need to know. You can't, and as the author said, you can't go into the prayer, into the sajda of the second rak'ah, thinking, I'm just going to intend Jum'ah just for the sake of it. You know you've missed it, because you've been taught that you've missed it. And that's why that statement's going to come up in a minute, that you must have the intention for dhuhr. You can't, yani, you know, go in and miss the unit, know that you've missed both units, and just hope that, you know what, I'm just going to stand up, pray too, because otherwise, best yogi, yani, and people are watching and whatever, whatnot, and just hope it happens. No, you have to intend dhuhr, and you clean it up as dhuhr. Hamza. It is the one second. So you, but it wouldn't matter, right?
Well, so
if you didn't know whether it's the first ruku' or second ruku', you'd know straight away in about 30 seconds. No. Why would there be an intention change? If you're catching the ruku', you're always going to intend Jum'ah. I'm. No. Listen. If you're catching a ruku', whether first or second, you know you've caught Jum'ah.
If you're catching
the sajda, if you're catching the sajda, you're saying that you came and you saw the second sajda and you thought this is the first sajda.
Yes.
And good question. Yeah. I see this is why I make the mistake of going too far. This is not today's lesson anyway. But you do not need to have that intention. So you're going to find out. Okay? But I set myself up for that. Yeah.
If you want to combine your dhuhr and your
qasr. That's a cheeky move, but then it qasr. You see, where do you get these hypothetical questions from, bro? You would have thought that I was telling you need to set hypothetical scenarios or something. Intentionally, that's not allowed. Qamar's question is basically, could you come late intentionally to the Jum'ah prayer, miss it, the two units, catch it in sajda, make the blag that you turned up, pray a dhuhr prayer, and then do the dhuhr and asr like this, that's yani not that's not on, that's not on, not intentionally, but it's a sick move though. I like it. You see in the hypotheticals, yani you see some madness yani going ahead, isn't it? It's on, yeah, Shaz? I think it's on. Just tap in. Actually, they can hear it. It's okay. It's okay. We're just going to have the Isha Adhan.
كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم إنك حميد مجيد. اللهم بارك على محمد وعلى محمد كما باركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد. اللهم رب هذه الدعوة التامة والصلاة القائمة محمدا الوسيط القدير بعد مقام محمود الذي وعدت إنك لا تخلف. All
right, folks. So the next point then the Sheikh makes, and he makes an interesting side point actually. He says that in the Hanbali madhab, in the school itself, all of the idrakat, okay, which means the catching of prayers, all of them are caught with just takbiratul ihram. This is now not referring to this. You know what we're speaking about? We're speaking about the imam, okay? I want you to just make the difference now. We're speaking about the imam establishing the actual prayer itself with the Muslims. So to give you, to make it even clearer, the imam realizes, oh my God, it's really late for us to all pray Jumu'ah prayer. I need to cut my sermon right now. I've got 30 seconds left before Asr. I have to say takbir. And then he says, Allahu Akbar. And now everybody can now pray the Jumu'ah prayer. Is that clear? That's what yani is being, that's what the chapter is referring to. Now I'm just presenting a different issue. And that is, how does a person legally catch a prayer, right? Like, when do you actually catch the legality of the prayer? Well, the Hanbali school is unique amongst the four schools in that it believes you can catch a prayer just with takbiratul ihram. And it has one exception, and that exception is the Jumu'ah prayer itself. for the Jum'ah prayer, they say that for you to pray the Jum'ah prayer, you have to actually catch rak'ah, as we said a few minutes ago. So it can get a little bit confusing that takbirat al-ihram, put to the side. They actually agree with the vast majority, which says, no, absolutely not. To catch a prayer, you must catch the ruku'ah. You must do one rak'ah of the prayer for it to be counted as a prayer. All right? Not just making takbir. So this example comes in a lot when it comes to fajr, for example. When it comes to asr, for example. So a person has not prayed asr and maghrib is coming closer. According to the Hanbalis, as long as you say Allahu Akbar before maghrib starts, you can now continue praying the asr prayer. And it's written as the asr prayer. According to the Hanafis, the Malikis and the Shafi'is, they said you got to catch a rak'ah. You got to catch a rak'ah and then afterwards you can then take it easy. So this is why we have the emergency prayer. That's why we study that, right? That's why we taught the idea that you would now break it down into a very bare minimum. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah rabbil alameen. No surah. Allahu Akbar. Subhana rabbil azeem. Sami Allahu. Now you breathe. So you get that rak'ah done in 30 seconds or 20 seconds just to catch the time. Then Sami Allahu liman hamida, and now you relax. Even down now, it's gone into sunrise, for example, if this was a fajr. Or it's gone into maghrib, which is a haram time, because it is a late asr. It's not haram for you, because you've prayed before. You started your prayer before. Does that make sense? Yeah? So I want you to think about that, that the Hanbalis say that takbir is enough. The rest of the imams say one raka'ah needs to be completed to count that prayer as an actual prayer. Now, just to give you an appreciation of why this is important. It's important because there are legal ramifications based upon this. Okay? Because whatever position you decide to choose, it will affect it. So for example, I'm going to throw a few hypotheticals out there. If we have a woman, okay? And she's not sure when she's about to start menstruating. Okay? Maghrib starts, the time Maghrib starts, and then she starts menstruating, okay? After Maghrib. What will the Hanbalis say about this prayer, or about this lady? Who can answer me this question? So Maghrib has started, okay? We're a minute into Maghrib time. What will the Hanbalis say about this lady? Yeah. The Hanbalis. So the Hanbalis will say what?
There's enough time through takbir in that time.
There is enough time to make takbir in that time. And because there is enough time to make takbir in that time, why didn't you make takbir in that time? So that now is a second point. And because there was enough time and you didn't bother doing it, you now owe Salatul Maghrib. Clear, everybody? Is that clear? What's the position of the majority? The position of the majority is slightly different. They're saying that if it's 1 minute in, and I gave the example of 1 minute, they'll say, no, if she starts to menstruate after 1 minute after Maghrib started, that wouldn't have been enough time legally to do one rak'ah anyway. You see what I'm trying to say? So they would say that there's no issue for this lady. She does not owe Maghrib because it was never obligated upon her in the first place because she didn't have enough time legally, possibly, to be able to pray. You get the point, folks? The correct position on this matter, we did cover this in menstruation, and it's the position of Sheikh Uthaymeen. Anyone remember what it was? What's that? I can't hear. Doesn't have to make it up because there's more time left for the prayer, yeah? That's correct. We said that if a woman is not being negligent, and what do we mean by negligent? We mean delaying the prayer until its last minute. So Maghrib today is 7:54, yeah? And Isha was 9:15, all right? And a person is not praying Maghrib until 8, and then 8:30, and then 8:45, and then 9 o'clock, and then says, I still have time. Because legally, Maghrib is valid until Isha. The Sunnah is to pray Maghrib within the first 10-15 minutes. But legally, it is valid until Isha. And if a person is delaying until 9:05, 9:10, and they say, right, now I'm going to pray, this is taking liberties. This is playing games. This is the one, or this is the woman that all of the scholars will make them make up. And then what happens? So she's doing this, doing this, doing this, and then she starts menstruating. We say, you are the one who's playing games. You shouldn't have pushed it all the way back, and now you're saying, I'm menstruating, I don't pray. No, no, no. You had an hour and a half to be able to do the prayer, you should have done it. But if a woman is not doing that intentionally, and let's say normal, 15, 20 minutes into Maghrib, you know, she's just getting herself ready, whatever, then she starts menstruating, she's not required to pray that, make up that Maghrib prayer, because she has not done anything wrong. She had another hour left for her to pray, technically speaking. Do you understand the point? That's the actual correct position. Wallahu ta'ala a'lam. So that's like, that's one example. Another example would be a woman, she is menstruating, okay? And she stops menstruating 30 seconds before Maghrib. 30 seconds before Maghrib. Clear? What's the consequences here? According to? Because? Correct. According to the Hanabila, okay, she has to pray Salatul Asr, okay, and also, by the way, in the Hanbali position, she has to pray Dhuhr as well, right? She has to pray Dhuhr as well because Dhuhr is something which is combined with, yani the way that they approach it, they say that if you become clean in a prayer time in which another prayer can be attached to it, then you've got to bring that one yani forward and bring your Dhuhr forward and combine it with the Asr. Were you going to say, how is she going to shower and get ready and all the rest of it? It doesn't matter about the showering and the whatever, because she's going to make it up afterwards. Right? The point is that it became obligated upon her. 30 seconds left, you had enough time to make takbiratul ihram. So now go and shower. Half an hour later, you're going to pray Dhuhr, Asr, and then Maghrib, because now it's Maghrib time. That's what the Hanbalis will say. The rest of us will say, the majority will say that no, she didn't need to pray Asr, because in 30 seconds, she couldn't have prayed one rak'ah anyway. Does that make sense? So therefore, Asr was not obligated upon her. And the correct position also is that you do not ever need to make the Dhuhr prayer up, or if you become clean in Isha, you don't need to pray the Maghrib as well. You just need to pray the prayer that you have become pure in that period of time. Is that clear, folks? All right? We'll stop there when it comes to the text. What other, let's take some questions that people have got either here, then if not, then online. Yep.
Can you talk about the evidence for the Iqra' Salah?
Yes. The evidence is that they interpreted ruku'ah as the salah itself. What that means is that they said that when you look at the Quran and Sunnah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala refers to the prayer as the sajda, as the ruku'ah, as the whatever, and that these are like, you know, when we speak about the hand, we mean the arm, when we speak about the arm, we mean the hand, when we speak about the head, we mean the person, when we speak about Allah seeking His face, we mean Allah. So they said that this is how their interpretation was. Wallahu ta'ala a'lam. Any other questions here? Online, would she have been expected to already have wudu before Maghrib? The same point that Hamza made. Aisha's like, what if she was eating? What if she was eating? What's that got to do anything? Stop eating then, I don't know. When you have a salah, if you catch the last rak'ah, you catch the prayer. But is it different for Jum'ah? You need to catch the ruku'ah. It is correct, but we're talking about two different things. We're not talking about the reward of the prayer. You still have to make up the prayer. If you catch anything, you've got to make up the prayer. We're talking about the Jum'ah prayer for legally it to continue as a Jum'ah prayer. You've got to catch a rak'ah. You have to catch a rak'ah. Any other questions, folks? All right, khalas. Jazakumullah khair. Again, reminder, on Saturday at Salford University, just go to almaghrib.org and you'll see Sheikh Sulaiman Ahani is obviously visiting. And it'll be great for the folks locally to support that. Remember, I told you that it's important for us to make sure that these classes have good attendances and keep going. Otherwise, the whole thing then dies off. So that's important. Secondly, what was this other thing I was going to say? Yes, the folks that are here to sort out the distribution of people and the like, after Salatul Isha, if you can meet outside the entrance doors, that'd be great. Barakallahu feekum, subhanakallahumma bihamdik, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka allahumma wa atubu ilayk, wa salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you guys get yourselves ready for in your prayer lines, barakallahu feek. Shaz, you got a pen?